702.
The Car Feature
with Nicole Lowe.
It's now 22 minutes to 3 o'clock, and the Car Feature is brought to you by OUTsurance. Remember to SMS OUT to 38350 and see how much you can save on your car insurance, or you can ask for 500 Rand if you don't. Good afternoon, Nicole.
Yeah, listeners.
Yes, good to be with you. First installment, our first conversation this year. Was it a good festive period?
Yes, it was quiet, but it was also good and relaxing, so no problems there.
Yes.
And absolutely on your side as well.
Absolutely. I mean, what a restful period when you've got nowhere to go.
Exactly.
So you've been looking at diesel particulates filters in the exhaust system, especially of diesel cars. So how do they work?
Yes, Azania. So, obviously in South Africa, the emission laws are not that strict. We're only at Euro 2 at this stage, so we don't need diesel particulate filters in our exhaust systems of our diesel cars.
Mm-hmm.
But in Europe, you do. There we've got Euro 6 and ongoing. It increases all the time, the stringent emission laws. And there you need a diesel particulate filter. So what is a diesel particulate filter? So if you drive behind an old lorry or a bus and you see all that black smoke from the exhaust, that is carbon particles that is actually going out, and it's bad for the environment, it's bad for your health, it's bad for your lungs. So you don't want that. And so what the manufacturers are doing now, they're fitting a filter in the exhaust system that catches these soot particles. And now we're getting these vehicles from Europe that gets imported. They are Euro 6, and they're running in South Africa, and they've got these filters for it. So not all diesel vehicles in South Africa, all buckies, all SUVs will have these filters. It all depends on what emission level they are running at.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, most of the high-end vehicles coming from Europe, they've got these filters for it. So how it works is it catches the soot. As it exits the engine, the combustion chamber, it goes down the exhaust and this filter catches it. But now this filter fills up with soot over time. And it depends. It can be 600 kilometers, can be 1,000 kilometers. Then it gets to a level where it's basically full, and it tells the engine control unit it's time to regenerate. So that's a term they use when they clean out the filter. And what they really do, the filter gets burned out. So the exhaust gases of a diesel engine are actually quite cool compared to a petrol engine. So normally it's about 450 degrees, but you need about 600 degrees Celsius to burn off the soot in this filter. So It will go into regeneration mode. It changes the injection timing. They actually add some post-injections in the combustion chamber. And what it does is it increases the exhaust temperature up to 600 degrees. And now this filter actually burns the soot off and it clears it out again.
Mm.
Now, the problem is, I mean, this only takes about 5 minutes or so. You won't even notice when you're driving a car that it went into this regeneration mode. You'll never be aware of it. But now if you're driving a car in stop-start traffic, or you're just running around the house and you don't do a lot of miles, you don't do motorway driving, this filter gets filled up and it never gets a chance to regenerate. So it gets fuller and fuller. And eventually it will tell you on the instrument cluster, please take the car to the motorway, it's time to regenerate. On the motorway, it's the easiest time for the engine to regenerate because the exhaust temperatures are obviously hotter when you drive on the motorway. It's more load on the engine and it's easier to regenerate. But sometimes you cannot listen to this message. Or some of the readers or listeners out there, they don't listen to that message. It gets full to a stage where it says, oh, sorry, I can't regenerate anymore. You have to take the car now to a dealership.
Mm-hmm.
So you take the car to the dealership and they can do what they call a service regeneration, which is under controlled conditions at the dealership, and they can sort of clean out this filter with a certain procedure. But there is a chance that you actually get it too full where it actually won't even work for a dealer regeneration and you have to replace this filter.
Right.
And the cost of these filters are horrendous. I mean, we're talking about 50,000 rand for a DPF. So maybe it's just a tip out there. When you start seeing, if you drive one of these luxury diesel vehicles, it tells you the message, go and drive in a motorway, rather go and do it. Don't risk the service regen or the chance that you actually have to replace the DPF. So it's all good and well for the environment, but it can be very expensive pockets
mm-hmm.
if you don't adhere to the messages.
So by the time it reaches the level where you might need to buy a brand new one, does this often happen when it's out of warranty with the higher mileage?
Yeah, so the higher mileage of the vehicle, it will start burning a bit of oil as well. That causes more soot particles. So with time, it probably will fill up sooner, the filter. I said it will take on average between 600 and 1,000 kilometers between every region. So when it gets older, it might be more frequent than that. But there's no reason why it shouldn't be able to clear it out. But it is a very expensive component to replace. I know there is companies that can replace it with a straight pipe. So you take the filter out. Obviously, it's very bad for the environment. And you have to change the software of the vehicle because the diagnostics will pick up the filter isn't present. So it's a complicated system to get past. So just a message to the listeners out there. If you drive a vehicle with a DPF, listen to those messages on the cluster and don't let it get to that stage where you have to replace it. The reason why they cannot regenerate when it's too full, it's a lot of soot and carbon in that filter and it can lead to a thermal event. So it can actually lead to a fire if you try to regenerate one of these filters that are completely full past the safe levels.
Right. So you might have a question about the DPF, and that is the diesel particulate filters. Let us know. And also, whatever technical question you might have this afternoon for Nicole, your opportunity is now on 011-883-0702. There was a question that came in much earlier, Nicole, when I mentioned that we will be speaking to you. And one of our listeners wants to know that whether or not he can receive a written record of the repairs that the mechanic has made. He intends to sell his car one day and wants to know what form this record can take or should take to ensure that the sale later on is successful, that there's a decent record.
Yeah, I think it is worthwhile keeping record of the service history of a vehicle. Mm. With modern vehicles now, with service plans and so on, that get serviced at the dealerships, at least still on the service plan, that history is stored at the dealership under the VIN number of the vehicle. So it's quite easy if it's a relatively modern vehicle, when you're buying a vehicle that's still, say, less than 5 years old, you should be able to go to, say, it's a VW, you should be able to go to a VW garage and they type in the VIN number of the vehicle and they'll give you what was done to that vehicle over its life. But obviously when it gets out of warranty and now you don't need to service it at the dealerships anymore and you service it at technical specialists and so on, it is a good idea to keep the service history. But now it gets a bit more complicated as your listener that wrote in or asked the question. Because now, is it paperwork that you do? Is there an app that you can use? I think the good old trusted way is actually just paperwork. So keep the invoices. I've seen classic cars that they sell, and the documentation going with a car, it looks like a Bible. It's really thick with all the invoices, all the work that's done with it. But people that are interested in these cars, and especially if it's old cars or classic cars, the history counts for a lot. So I would rather keep it, have it on file, keep a file with the hard copies of the invoices that was done with the vehicle. So modern vehicles have got everything on computer, but after it's out of warranty, then maybe a file and the hard paper copies would be the best.
Right. Nicole, let's take a break as we get into the calls after this. My guest is technical advisor Nicole Lowe. If you're having technical challenges or you have technical questions about your car, give us a call, 011-883-0702.
You're with Azania Musaka on 702.
Lines are always open on 011-883-0702.
Listen, let's get straight to the lines. Figile is calling us from Soweto with a question about his Hyundai Tucson for Nicole. Hello, Figile.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm good, and how are you?
Good, good. I've got a huge issue with Hyundai. Mm. So I initially took my car there in October. It had a leak, it overheated, and there was a leak of water and something. And then they said they fixed it. It came back. After a few weeks, I then had a problem with it starting. It couldn't start well. The heater didn't work. And then I took it back to them, and that was in December. So when I took it back to them, then they said to me, the gasket has blown. Mm. So I just want to know, right now the engine has, I've been told the engine has been changed altogether. It is under warranty, but the cost that I've been incurring, that they're telling me that I need to register the engine myself. I actually was about a car almost half of December, or the better last latter part of December. Mm-hmm. And I felt it was their fault in that I took a car to them where they said it was only a battery problem. They called me as soon as they took it in December and told me that it was a battery problem, and then that they had fixed the thermostat. But then they then said to me they found a leak of water. Mm. So my thinking is that they didn't fix the leak initially when I bought it. Mm. Then the problem could have been seen in October instead of now in December when they blew the gasket. And I think I need to have some recourse to say they need to do something about it, because they had now changed the engine. It can't just be a little thing to change an engine.
Yeah.
So I just need to know what my recourse is, because I've gone to Hyundai. I've complained to head office. They just sort of dismissed me and said to me, no, they are dealing with it and your car's still under warranty, and they'll fix the engine in January.
Have you contacted the ombudsman on that side of things? We'll talk about the technical matters with Nicole in a moment, but have you lodged a complaint if you're struggling to resolve it directly with them?
No, I've lodged a complaint with Hyundai South Africa only, because I took the car to Volkswagen. So then I escalated to head office. That's where I'm at the moment.
I see. Let's get a sense from a technical perspective. Nicole?
Yes. So from a technical point of view, what it sounds like what happened is there was a leak. It leaked water and the engine overheated. So the first thing that will happen when the engine starts overheating is the head gasket. That is the gasket between the head and the cylinders. It's actually a packing that will go. Normally what also happens, the cylinder head will start to warp because of the temperature slightly. And what then can happen is that oil and water can mix, and all sorts of nasty things can happen when the head gasket goes. But I think what might have happened is the vehicle overheated. It was brought to Hyundai and they looked at it and they thought, okay, well, we'll change thermostat and we'll fix the leak, and hopefully, like, they probably did a few tests and see maybe the head gasket is still fine. But by the sound of it, when she took the vehicle back, it probably overheated again, and maybe the head gasket then, on when it brought in for a second time, they realized, no, the head gasket is gone, and maybe the damage to the engine was terminal. So as I understand it correctly, the engine is now changed. Is that correct?
Yeah, the engine is now changed.
Yeah. So that's the right thing to do for Hyundai. I mean, a new engine will probably cost around 150 or even more thousand rand. So it's a big cost that they incurred under warranty to fix this car, which is the right thing to do. I'm surprised to hear that they say you have to now get police clearances and stuff. I would have thought Hyundai would do that, because the legal situation of changing an engine is obviously now a new engine number. So the documentation of the vehicle needs to be updated. To do that, you need a police clearance on that engine number, and you also need data dotting on the engine number, and then you can change the documentation. But because it's under warranty, and I would guess that Hyundai should do that process. I don't think it should be you that should do or pay for that process to get your documentation updated. So I think in the end, Hyundai did the right thing. Maybe they misdiagnosed the first time around, but the second time now they did the right diagnosis. They changed the engine. So the good thing for you is you've got a brand new engine in your car, which is worth a lot of money. And they just need to update the documentation. What they maybe could have done better is the diagnosis should have been the right one. Then it wouldn't have been the second case. And also maybe a courtesy call, because it sounds like you've been without a car for a long time. So that's maybe something that Hyundai could also have been better with, maybe for a courtesy call. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's worthwhile checking your insurance policy as well as your contract actually buying the car. Sometimes the small print tells you that you can get a courtesy car in that kind of situation. So that's the only thing that I think Hyundai could do better. I just think they need to do the legal process for you, and I think hopefully your problems would be sorted now.
Figile, there you go. But also as a resource, just to maybe better understand what your options are at this point, maybe contact the Motor Industry Ombudsman of South Africa.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. If you don't come right, come back to us and we'll see how we can help. Okay.
Thank you very much.
That's Figile. Thank you. That's Figile in Soweto there. Dirk, you are in Edenville. Good afternoon. You have a question about a diesel car?
I've got an NP200 that the turbo had blown. They replaced the turbo and they found that the exhaust, the catalytic converter, was all blocked with oil. So they removed the catalytic converter from the exhaust. Is that going to be a problem? Do you have to have some back pressure or is that okay?
Okay. Is it going to be a problem, Nicole?
Yeah, and the catalytic converter is sort of the same thing in a sense that it's an emission device that costs a lot of money. So to replace a catalytic converter with a new one will cost you thousands of rand, 20,000, 30,000 rand easily. So some companies would actually just put a straight pipe in and maybe have to adapt the software of the ECU because obviously diagnostics will now say where's the DPF in the system, which is not there anymore. Just remember that obviously it's not good for the environment if you haven't got a catalytic converter. It's not designed to run that way. Back pressure wise, the engine is designed to run with a certain amount of back pressure, but because it's got a turbo, the turbo would probably be the most back pressure anyway, not the catalytic converter. So I don't think it will be the end of the world. There's probably a lot of people out there with similar problems. So, I mean, my guess would be that it should be fine. Is the vehicle, what's the mileage? And I suppose it's long time out of warranty as well, eh?
Yes, yes. It's over 150,000 kilometers.
Yeah, so I don't think it should be a problem from a technical point of view as long as the diagnostics are happy because obviously that unit is now gone and obviously the emissions will be a lot higher than the vehicle was designed for. But from a technical point of view, I think it should run fine.
Right. Dirk?
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Next, we go to Randburg. That's where Zweli is. Hi, Zweli. You have a question about a starter.
Yes, I do. Good afternoon, guys. Yeah, I'm driving at Nissan Qashqai 22 model, way out of warranty. But what it does, the mechanism between the starter and the central locking, most of the time it gets out of sync. But sometimes the key will be stuck on the ignition. You try to take it off, it doesn't come out. You know, sometimes out of blue, the central locking, now it works. You know, the key, and I can confirm, literally, it's not a battery on the key. So I just want to find out, will it be worth it to take it to the dealership directly, of which I suspect they might text me for that? Or do you have a dedicated area, specific place that I can take it to?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a central locking that doesn't work from the remote itself. As I understand
yes.
correctly, it sounds
yes.
like if you say the, I mean, it's a couple of things that can be wrong, go wrong. But the battery is the obvious one to change in the remote because that's the cheapest and the easiest one to fix. Secondly, you need to know that the remote is actually sending out the signal correctly. And then thirdly, the vehicle itself has got a receiver that needs to receive the signal, and it's normally the body control unit of the vehicle that operates all the doors and the locking mechanisms and so on. So I would guess the best is to take it to a technical specialist or even an auto electrician rather than the dealership, because that will be a strange one for the dealership to try and diagnose if they're used to servicing cars all the time. This is more electrical. I will even say you can maybe take the key to one of these companies that does key coding. They're quite specialized, and they can actually see if the transmitter of the key is actually working, because they can sort of clone keys and do those kind of things and see if the key is actually operational. So my first port of call will be check the battery, check the remote itself that it's sending out the signal, and from there you can go to the vehicle itself, and that's a body control module and the receiver to see that it's actually seeing the signal from the key. But start at the key and use these key coding companies and use an auto electrician. I would rather use them than going to the dealership.
There you go.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zweli. Your instincts were right on that one. Nicole, thank you so much. We have another appointment next month. All the best through January.
Same to you. Thank you very
much. Thank you. That's Nicole Lowe, technical advisor. We connect with them once a month when we talk cars on Tuesdays. If you're new, of course, to the show, then maybe you're not familiar with how things flow. But on Tuesdays at 2:30, that's when we focus on different car issues. We have different car conversations, and the technical aspects are just simply once a month.